Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Taxation is Theft, where taxation is theft and extortion is too. I have Cameron here with me, Cam X, as he's calling himself today. We're going to be talking about some pretty interesting history and stuff. That's really cool. But before we get into that, I just want to make a couple announcements because I've been ramping up the Berman 2020 campaign. Oh, my camera's going to shit. You know what it was? I updated OBS. Never update. I shouldn't have updated. Berman2020.com. You can go there if you want to check out the campaign. If you want to send me a message, I am looking for lots of volunteers. We already have a lot. We need a lot more. And if you want to go to Berman2020.com, you can also make a donation. We're going to be working on a few donation campaigns like money bombs and all that sort of thing. But I'm working on getting to all of the conventions that are starting to come up where they're going to have debates. I know some of the other candidates have already committed to some of them. I've committed to a couple of them. I'd like to be able to go to more of them, but we got to start raising some money. And of course, even more important than that, I don't know, is it more important than that? We also need to raise money to get a lot of the advertising going. And the advertising is awesome because the advertising is not just about me. It's about the idea that taxation is theft. We want the whole world to understand this, and we've got some really awesome plans for that. So go ahead, send in your donations and keep an eye on the campaign. Send me a message if you want to volunteer. And with that, let's get into it. So welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So last time we were talking about your unfortunate mishap with the police, who had no idea what they were doing,
right?
And when we wrapped up the live stream, we started talking just about all kinds of random stuff, and we started getting into history, and we got into this like really interesting conversation about history and stuff. And I was like, hey, let's do another show and let's talk about this stuff, because it was yeah, actually really interesting. So where do we start? You ever have a conversation and you're like, oh shit, the I wasn't recording. Can you do that all over again?
I think the biggest thing that I remember from that conversation is looking at the Iberian Peninsula, which is what is now Spain and Portugal. And they actually have a really interesting history when you look at what happens to that area after the collapse of the Roman Empire. And it's really interesting in the context of what we as libertarians believe about, you know, the individual. And you kind of see an interesting thing happen after the Roman Empire collapses, and this is something that happens from like 700 AD all the way to like 1492 or something like that, where all of a sudden all these people are living by themselves, and they used to be ruled by the Roman Empire and now they're not anymore. So now you got all these people all of a sudden free. And what happens is a whole bunch of these people decide to rise up against their neighbors, and you know,
there's no government to rise up against, so they're going to rise up against their neighbors.
Yeah, so they are like, okay, well, how would I do this? I want to rule, but I'm not just going to go up to my neighbor and be like, I own you now, And he's like, I could, but he's not going to like buy into that theory. So what they did is they got the Roman Catholic Church to bless their claim of authority to basically say, okay, I rule you now. And by the way, the church said I rule you too. They agree with me. So you, but now you really better submit to my authority.
Or you'll go to hell, right?
Yeah. And you know, in the way that we think about things today, it sounds kind of ludicrous, right? Because it's like, if everyone's all of a sudden free, I don't think that would happen again if that happened in 2019. Because I think today people have passed through enlightenment way of thinking enough to where they're like, I don't care what church you say agrees with you. You don't rule me. I'm my own person.
Well, I think that's a small. There are certainly those people, but I think that's relatively. Sure. That's not the. Okay, because remember, most of the majority are sitting here thinking we need government to rule over us, or else we're gonna. I would commit murder if it weren't illegal. That's right. Today's intellectual.
Right, but I mean, I think it's crazy to think about how. All it took is just one simple thing. The church says so, you know, and, you know, I'm a Christian myself, but it doesn't, like, even I can see where, how messed up that is, you know.
That's the same claim the government makes for the most part, or kings.
Yes. And you see that all over the place, too. You see that in China. China's big. For that kind of mentality, even more so. China, what's interesting about China is they took it to a whole new level where they completely melded the idea of, you know, God, what you're supposed to do because of God and the government with, you know, Confucianism. It's just like completely envelops the whole Chinese philosophy from an early point where now you're supposed to be loyal to your family, but now you're also supposed to be loyal to the government. And it's considered like all part of the same package where they thought of the emperor was like the ultimate, like you think of the emperor as your father essentially. And it's crazy how government kind of takes advantage of how people think about ethics. And they're like, oh yeah, you are loyal to your family. We're your family now because we want you to be loyal to us.
And right.
It's you can speculate all day long about why people chose to adopt that way of thinking, but it's all over the place. You look at even looking at colonization of the East Coast in Americas when the England came over here, and you imagine when people set up Jamestown, they thought in their head, we're not allowed to do that unless we get permission from the king. Like, and this Jamestown weren't not even Indians were occupying that space. Like,
Native Americans,
American Indians, whatever. But the point is, no one was living there. It was like, it was kind of like not very good land. And so these. Basically, English, British people wanted to take and live there for some reasons. But the point is, they didn't think they would be able to do that unless they had permission from the king, like miles away. Today, I feel like we would kind of consider, like, if it's empty land, like nobody owns it, like who cares what? That'd be right. Like us. Finding it'd be like an American citizen finding an island somewhere that no one has discovered and no one's living there and being like, I'm not allowed to live there unless Donald Trump says it's okay.
Right.
Like, it's so weird, but that's how people thought, man.
That is. And I mean, if you think about it, it's, you know, going back to like the whole idea about family, it's kind of like, you know, let's say you're living at home and you're 10 years old and you know, you go wandering off into the forest. You ask your parents, can I go into the forest? Like, you know, you ask for permission. Right. Can I build a treehouse, or, you know, can I build a fort in the forest? You're going to ask your parents for permission. But, I mean, shit, and maybe that's where it came from. But it's like, when we're adults, we have to recognize, you know, hey, we're free.
Right.
I think, and I wonder, you know, I know a lot of people have said that it's when, like, a lot of parenting is kind of conditioning people to obey authority. And so the way, you know, this is a relatively new concept where people are doing like this peaceful parenting where it's like you teach your kids to use thought and understanding to correct their behavior instead of, you know, slapping them or whatever.
It's almost like kind of like an enlightenment in a way, or awakening, where people are like, well, let's try this, because, you know, there's data that's kind of challenging this whole idea that violence, or even just calling it spanking, like, if you don't like it, framing it that way. But this whole idea, like, maybe this isn't the best way. Maybe just hitting or spanking your child every time they do something out of line, maybe that's not the best way to teach them the best way to live.
And maybe, especially when it's... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Maybe our children are a lot more capable of reasoning than we give them credit for. Just gotta give them a chance. You know?
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, I've heard the analogy made, like, and it makes sense. Let's say you give your kids property, right? Like, let's say you give them a PlayStation, and they misbehave, and so you say, I'm going to take your PlayStation away. What you're teaching them is that, and let's say their misbehavior was, like, they didn't punch somebody at school. They, maybe their grades were too low. Oh, your grades are too low? I'm going to take your PlayStation away. Wait a minute. That's their property. So now you're telling someone, you're conditioning them to understand that if you don't live up to someone else's expectations, they can take your property away. And you know, maybe it's smoking weed. You catch your kids smoking weed and you want to take their PlayStation away because, you know, you don't want them to be a pothead and not do anything with their life. Well, sure. Yeah, probably nobody wants that. But at the same time, do you really have like this authority to kind of command how, I mean, like, that's probably an example that, you know, most people would take more personally. But what about, like, you know, you want your kids to be a doctor and they're like, no, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Like, you know, or I want to be an artist.
Yeah.
Like, that one pisses a lot of, or, you know, your son wants to be a dancer. That's, that's one that pisses people off.
That's a typical one.
Yeah. It's like, we're trying to, we're basically using a statist mentality to control their behavior, which doesn't work the same way that we've seen, you know, when the government tries it, it doesn't work.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not a parent myself. I never have been, but I think at the very least, there's something to be said about the whole idea of like giving guidance that's actually relevant. Like, you brought up the example with the grades. Like, what does the PlayStation have to do with my grades? You can say, like, there's just a whole manner of different ways to go about that. Give it some, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be punishment. But I feel like a lot of times you can show your kids the importance of getting those good grades and figure out, okay, why aren't they getting good grades? Maybe it's just because they're having a hard time with something specific and need somebody to help them out.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I guess that's put on the parents from a completely different perspective, right? Because the government comes to you and says, if your kid doesn't get a 4.0 GPA, he's stupid. There's something wrong with him. But the reality is the people who are selling you that theory have this really fucked up education system that like is broken. So it's basically saying, you know, we have failed to teach your kids to have good grades, and therefore your kid is stupid.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
That's so backwards. And it's like, and you know, it's not relative at all. It's like, you know, what do they say? If you judge a fish by his ability to climb a tree, the fish will think he's stupid or something like that.
He'll live his whole life thinking he's stupid. Yeah. For sure. And I think, man, I really believe that when you look at across history and you look at all these different time periods in different areas where there was some kind of revolution, like, it doesn't happen without changing a frame of mind. You know, in China, there's like the Warring States period where everyone was just constantly at war for like decades. And what got them out of it was not some great leader, military prowess. It was literally an explosion of different philosophy. Now, some of those philosophies were military oriented. That's where you get like Sun Tzu and stuff. But most of it was how to live correctly, how to live a moral life. There was Maoism came from that, Confucianism came from that, a whole bunch of stuff. And it was really just this human need to discover how do we live. And it's this assumption that if we live the right way, then we'll stop being at war with each other all the time. And maybe that's not true and we're just crazy humans, but maybe there's something to that. I always find it interesting, just to take a complete tangent, is when you look at before the American Revolution, the very year that the colonists decided to come after the king and start rebelling, same year they erected a statue in honor of that very same king. So it kind of makes you wonder, like, what made them switch so fast? Yeah. I actually don't know the answer to that, but it's interesting.
That's an interesting, because I know there have been probably all kinds of civilizations where you have a public who are, they treat their rulers almost like gods, and mm-hmm. everything they do is to serve the god. And so it's like, you know, it's really interesting because you have, you know, people of faith like Christians who will, you know, they'll live their lives and say, you know, my entire life today is dedicated to God. I'm going to do, you know, what would Jesus do? Like, you know,
right.
I'm going to live my life for God today. But there are people who have lived the same way for these rulers, which is, you know, it's a completely different story, because these rulers, like, yeah, they might have, I don't know. It's really interesting, because I kind of want to say they're the same, right? Everyone puts their pants on one leg at a time. I'm sure there are some people who try to do both. They just hop in. But like, at the same time, they are a little bit different in what they've been able to accomplish, you know, not to say whether it's morally right or wrong at this point, but to achieve big things, right? Like, even if it's something ethical, like somebody who's been able to build a big structure or an organization, something like that, like, that's, you know, they're still flesh and bone, but they've achieved a level of skill to be able to make that happen. And it's a skill that anyone can, I guess that's the thing, anyone can obtain this skill. So for somebody to become, you know, king or ruler or something, really anybody could do that if they really wanted to. And what's really interesting, like, I see this a lot with entrepreneurs, right? there was, I've said this before, I used to be like a total seminar junkie, and it's interesting because a lot of the seminars were always like, you know, they were like, you know, how to improve your life, right, in one way or another, and most people wanted to improve their life in money. And one thing that all of these courses always go back and focus on are, you know, your objection with money. And what's really fascinating is, like, anyone is really capable of starting a business and making good money. But we all have this kind of inherent objection to it, thinking that, you know, wealthy people are big, evil people. And there's no way that I could ever possibly be a millionaire unless I started some evil corporation and I were ripping people off. And right. And when you have that mentality, then, and you know, this is actually the same, you know, running for president, I hear a lot of these objections from the anarchists who say, well, if you become president, you're just going to be like everybody else, you're going to rule over us. And it's really that same mentality, right? It's if, you know, if we were in a world where all the billionaires were big evil people who only obtained their money through through the use of force, like literally walking around with a gun and sticking it in everyone's face and saying, buy my product.
Yeah.
Then of course you would think that's the only way that you could become rich. And in the same way, right now, that's what our political landscape looks like. So it's, you know, most, almost like when I say most, I mean almost every single one of them, of these politicians, are where they are because they've engaged in some sort of corruption in order to get where they are. And so I can totally see where somebody would accuse me of that and say, look, if you win, it's because you are engaging in the corruption. You have to, or you're going to become a part of it. But it's not necessarily a fact. Statistically, it's very likely, but it's not a fact. And if somebody, you know, I always say this about politicians, right? Nobody wants political power except for the corrupt. Really. And in my defense, I don't want political power. I want nobody to have it. So it's a different approach. But it is that same, you know, if you're going to get up there, how do you get up there? And it's the same thing, you know. So when it comes to running a business, if you have this mentality that, well, the only way I can have a successful business is if I rip people off, and I can't rip people off, you're basically condemning yourself to not having a successful business. And that's really damaging, because then what you're doing is you're basically saying you're not even going to try, and you're allowing these other people who might be these big, evil, you know, corporate, monopolistic egomaniacs, you're allowing them to take all your business because you're not really willing to compete against them.
I mean, I feel like there's two sides to that story, because, you know, it's still true that, you know, big corporations, they do, once you get big enough, you can make money by doing pretty unethical things.
Sure.
Lobbying the government for regulations that make it harder for small businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And it's even possible to do things that are unethical as a small business. So, but it, I think these seminars have a point where it's like the money, the object of money itself isn't the problem. It's what are you doing with it, and why are you wanting it? Do you want that money just for like status? Or do you want it to actually fulfill your own duty to yourself and to the common man by helping other people? You know, so at the end of the day, money's a tool. It can be a tool for good, or it can be a tool for evil.
Just like a gun. Yep.
Just like a gun.
Absolutely.
I don't know that the analogy with government office is super applicable, just because you got something, we're talking about business, and you know, theoretically that's predicated on a bunch of consensual type of relationships.
Sure.
When it comes to the government, I can still see the contention people have, because it's like, sure, you can, it's like with Lord of the Rings, with the One Ring.
Right.
I want to get the ring to use it to crush the evil in this world. And then what always happens is they try to use it and then they turn evil, you know, or you have the people that say, well, I'm in office so I can get libertarian stuff passed. But, and well, you can't do that unless you play the game a little bit.
Right.
And so the question is,
and if you're willing to play the game,
how long are you supposed to be playing the game until you finally do something? And that's the trap people fall into, is like, oh, well, I just got to play along a little bit longer. Then they'll give me some higher class, some higher influence and power. Then I can start to do stuff. And it's just like,
right.
I don't buy that mentality or that strategy. That's why I feel like libertarians should be tackling, you know, offices where they can actually do something immediately. And I don't see that happening with these legislative offices that much, because what can you do? Just vote on stuff?
Right. Yeah, no, that's actually a really good argument for sheriff, because, you know, sheriff is arguably one of the most powerful positions in the country. Because you have, I mean, as sheriff, if the IRS or the ATF or the FBI comes into your county and does something that you see as criminal, you can arrest them. You have that power. If the police are breaking the law, you can arrest them. So your deputies have to follow, like, your deputies work for you. They have to follow your orders, or you can fire them, right? So if you tell them we're not going to make marijuana arrests, you can tell them, like, yeah, if you do that, you're fired. And the sheriff controls the police, in
right.
because the police are basically private security, and
right.
they have to act according, like, they're basically working under license of the sheriff. The sheriff is giving them permission to operate.
Right.
So if the police are, you know, doing the same thing, the sheriff can put his foot down and say, look, either you're going to stop doing that, or I'm going to start arresting you and dissolve your private security force.
I don't know about about arresting federal agents.
They can.
But there may be, that sounds a little out there for me, but
it might trigger a civil war, but they can, they have the authority.
Man.
Yeah.
Or it's, president.
I wonder how that would work. Yeah, I mean, like, even so, what's interesting is, like, even the when JFK got shot, there was this big fight over this because the FBI wanted to take his body and do the autopsy and all that other stuff.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
But because it was considered like, it wasn't a federal, it's not, murder is not a federal crime, even if you murder the president, it's a regular, you know, murder. And so that has to be investigated and prosecuted by the sheriff.
Huh.
So they really had jurisdiction, and the FBI just kind of forced their way in and said, no, we're taking this over, or the Secret Service.
That really brings up an interesting point then, because it's, people say all the time, well, the government can't do certain things, but
sure they can.
They do.
Yeah. They shouldn't, or they're not supposed to, but
right. Which
yeah.
really just kind of gets down to the whole theory of power and influence in the first place. It's like, the law isn't what gives the government its power. It's just people's belief that the government can do whatever they want that gives them that power.
Right.
That's literally,
or
that's all it is.
Or to the opposite, the if people look at the government and they say, look, the government's not gonna hurt me. There's a constitution there that's gonna protect me. They have a false sense of security, which prevents them from wanting to do anything about the abuse of power that the government does.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, why would you why would you try to take out a threat that's not, that you perceive as not being a threat?
Right. That actually brings up something interesting, because I've been looking into this recently too. With, when you look at the Enlightenment period, you start to ask, like, why did that not happen sooner? And what you start to see is, you know, Enlightenment came from a lot of people that were educated, but people had been educated for a long time. People had been wealthy landowners for a long time. The reason that it came about, and this is one theory, but the reason it came about, I think the thing that makes the most sense is you start to have wealthy landowners that had started from like the bottom, whereas before it was all people that were born into wealth. And so, yeah, they're learning this education that basically justifies their current status above everybody else, but it's like, I've always been that way, so why challenge that mentality? Whereas you start to have people that were born poor, and now they climb their way up, and all of a sudden they hit this ceiling. Those are the people that start challenging the mainstream thought, where it's like, okay, why can you do this, but I can't be in that place? And so then you start to see people getting into science, challenging religion or religious ideas, challenging the idea of controlled trade, where the British king takes all these duties for all the trade that happens, and saying, why not free trade? All of that stuff happens from people that had a reason to challenge the current thinking, because they actually know that there's an imbalance. And I think we can draw a huge parallel with that and the current like state of police and government overreach. Is like, a lot of people don't do anything, and a lot of people are willing to basically put their head in the sand over police brutality, police corruption, and not just police, but other areas of the government. Because why? Because it doesn't affect them personally.
Right.
And it's easy to ignore. Like, it's easy to ignore the disparity of the drug war, because it's happening in prisons. You got to go to the prison to see it. You got to go to the court to see it. And they don't go to court and they don't go to prison. So it's easy to think to yourself, hey, that's not a problem. It's not happening to me.
Right.
You know? And yeah, so that's...
You see, like... I mean, that's a really good point. When you have, you know, the wealthy and influential people who their friends aren't going to jail for it because the police aren't patrolling their neighborhoods and stopping them for every little thing, then of course they're going to think like, oh no, it's just criminals who do that. It's just, and which is really stupid, because you even have like some of those people who are doing the drugs and they're just like, ah, whatever. Like those cockroaches were doing it and they got caught because they live in a bad neighborhood and they're bad people because they're not like me. Like that's how people cut. And it's like, I think whatever it is, it's like defense mechanism. It's like, you know, it's almost like, well, at least they caught them and not me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're doing the same thing, it's, you know, you're just happy to not be in the neighborhood where they're always looking for that.
The crazy thing is that when you look at like the drug war and like how they started targeting crack, and all of a sudden in the news, all you see in the news is crack babies and black people in orange jumpsuits and like all over the news. And, you know, people who are perceptive would look at that and say, that's racist. This is happening. This is targeting black people, even though it's not specifically targeting them, it is. And then you have this debate, and then you get some guy that worked for Nixon, close with Nixon, finally just basically admitted, like, yeah, that was so that we could target black people without appearing to. Like, right. That's what it was. So now we know that. but we still have the same faith.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the answer is, but we got to find a way to get people to see themselves as a part of that victim class.
So, let's I want to we're like wandering way off topic from where we started, but I think like so last time we were talking about like the slave trade and how that was I can't remember what you said, but it was like you had to have, was it permission to own slaves or from the king or
No, that was land. So okay, so I think it was the first settlement from England in America was Jamestown, I think, if not one of the first. And what happens with Jamestown is the Virginia Company, they want to set up a pirate base, basically, so that they can more economically efficiently ravage all the Spanish ships that are coming from Mexico with all their silver. So they set up this base. There's a whole bunch of interesting observations to make about that. But the important thing when you're trying to connect it with slaves is all these people that came over were basically, they purchased, basically, it's kind of like permission from the king. So the Virginia Company, like I said before, if they were settling there, they had to get permission from the king. So the Virginia Company has all this land that they're allowed to live on from the king. So they sell portions of it to people from England and say, hey, we got a patch of land for you over there in America. It's all yours. You can farm it, everything. And this is really attractive to people in England if they don't own land, because the arrangement in Great Britain for most people was I either own land and I get all this big percentage from all the people that I'm allowing to farm on my land, or I'm the farmer who farms food, I'm allowed to keep it because it's not my land, and I give a percentage of it to the landlord. So obviously, if you're the guy working the land, it's a very attractive deal to you. If you can afford to purchase a portion of this land, it's like, hey, I can do this. I can just do what I'm doing. And the only difference is I get to keep all of it. So that's what they did. They went over to Jamestown. They got their land. And this happened a lot. And over time, people leave. And so what do you do when you leave? Well, you sell your land. So over time, you get these people that have this patch of land. And all of a sudden, all the land they own grows bigger and bigger and bigger. And so obviously they're only one person, so they can only work so much of that land. So what do? Is they go down to town and they're like, hey, so-and-so, I will pay you to help me work on my land and basically let me be the landowner just like it was in England. And nobody wants to do that, because why did anybody come over there? To be the landowner, not to be the farmer in that scenario. So nobody agrees to that. So what do is they try to sell this idea to people from England. Hey, you work for me for 4 years and then you get some land, or I give you pay or some reward. And that was attractive to people over there that wanted land, but they couldn't afford it. And so they have these basically contracts of like servitude or whatever. This doesn't work out because it's really expensive. Sometimes people change their mind and they leave and you can't track them down. Sometimes these landowners would treat people badly, even beat them, and they would get the contract voided by the courts. They would go to the court and like, hey, this wasn't in the contract, beating me. And the judge would be like, yeah, you're right. So contract's void. And it's like, okay, well, I just wasted all this money on this dude who doesn't have to work for me anymore. Also, these people were susceptible to disease. So that's bad. There, I want to say there's something else that sucked about that arrangement, but basically it sucked. And so they didn't get around it until, and I'm just going to summarize a whole bunch of shit because I want to get to the point. They end up grabbing Africans and putting them into these servitude contracts where they had to work for 4 years. They weren't as susceptible to disease. They knew how to farm a lot more often. It was just way better. And then they get this idea, and they did this by force. These Africans who were put into these servitude contracts, they didn't agree to it. They were forced into it. So that's messed up. But then they all of a sudden think to themselves, this is really nice how this works out for us. Wouldn't it be great if we could have servitude contracts, but forever? And so they did. And so they did it. And the reason it didn't work out, or the reason Africans couldn't just get out of these contracts, because they didn't have any rights. If they went, they tried to do this exact same thing under these contracts to the courts. The courts didn't recognize their rights because they're not from England. And so you get this really messed up situation where people are forced their servitude, and now we're just grabbing Africans to work on our fields. Why? And this is the real kicker that I want to get to. Why did people think that that's what they needed to do? They have all this land. Why is the answer, let me exploit other people, let me take advantage of other people and then violate their rights? Why? So that, because they felt, and this is this intrinsic status, like societal mentality, that I came over here to be the landowner. So now I'm going to recreate the situation where I'm exploiting other people. When it's interesting that that's where they went, instead of, we're here to be free from all that. And so when I have a situation where nobody wants to work with me, my solution isn't, let me raise the wages until somebody's willing to do it. The solution isn't, let me share my property with someone else and we can share the profits. The solution is, let me kidnap people and make them work for me. It's crazy, like, how ingrained into their psyche that was just seen as, like, yeah, what's wrong with that? Because they're coming from a place where that was the normal, being exploited. And so it's almost like they felt like they were owed the position where I'm exploiting people. And so, you know, like, anytime you have this new situation, I feel like, in culture, society, this new revolution, we always bring a little bit of where we came, of the bad, of where we came from, and we try to implement it into our new situation. And the challenge is to not. You see it all the time with people who call themselves libertarians. They still want to hold on to this little piece of statism that they like. And it's a struggle to just break that down, but it's so easy to do.
Right. And it's, I mean, I think, you know, you see a lot of people are, you know, they'll say that, like, you can ask people, is stealing wrong? And people say, yes, it's wrong. But then, you know, you give them a scenario, a hypothetical scenario, where they're going to benefit from some sort of theft, and they'll say, well, in that particular situation, it's not really stealing.
Right.
And yes, it's really crazy. And, but I think also, like, the, there are other factors that go into that. So there's also, like, the ease at which it's done, and the, you know, if everybody else is doing it, it must be okay. And, you know, you look at, if somebody, okay, so let's say, I'll use this example. Let's say you believe that bootlegging movies is wrong and it's immoral.
Okay.
What you know, most people would say, well, hey, do you want a movie that you can watch at home? Most people would say, well, okay, yeah, I'll go look at it on Netflix. I'll go to, you know, before that you would go to Blockbuster and you'd try to rent it. Or you might wait until it's available for sale, or you'd go watch it in the theater. But, you know, and these same people would say, yes, it's wrong to steal. Now, I know, like, you know, we can talk about, like, intellectual property and all that stuff. But my point is, if you're, you know, walking down the street in, like, you know, whatever, near a mall, shopping area, whatever, and somebody's sitting there selling bootleg movies, and it's like, hey, it's right here, it's $5, it's easy. A lot of people don't have any objection to that. They know it's wrong, but they know they're not going to get caught. They know that, you know, hey, like, it's not really a big deal. I'm not really causing the company to lose any money because it's not like I was going to pay to see this movie anyway. You know, there are all these rationalizations. And I don't want to argue whether or not it's because, you know, it's whatever. A lot of people say, like, yeah, it's not even a crime. But maybe that's just a rationalization. But because it's easy to say, like, that's not stealing.
Right.
Now, if you had to, you know, if you had to be the one to go into the movie theater with the camera and, you know, with all the equipment and, you know, oh, we need a tripod because we're going to do a professional production here. What was that Seinfeld episode where he was like, he told, I think it was Kramer. He's like, oh, my God, you did such a great job with that movie. The bootleg was better than the original. The camera work was amazing.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, if you have to be the one to do all that stuff, it's not that easy. And so, you know, if you give someone a camera and you tell them, hey, go into the movie theater and film the movie, they'll start growing a conscience and be like, I don't know if I want to do that. Now, some people will be like, I don't give a fuck, I'll do it. But more people will say, like, no, I don't want to get caught. It's not going to be easy. It's, you know, it's too much work. So it's the whole thing about making it easy. And then there's if everybody else is doing it. Like, if you went into the movie theater and everybody else had their cameras out, then, of course, it's going to be like, well, shit, everyone else is doing it. I might as well. I'll record this. I'll take it home and show it to my kids. Who cares?
Yeah.
So I think both of those are really interesting factors in that. And so when you apply that to the slave trade, it's, you know, if these people had to go to Africa, find people who were living happy, free lives, kidnap them, take them, and, you know, go through this whole process. And you know, they might say, well, that's too much work. If they were the only person doing it, they would say, well, what would my neighbors think of me? But when everybody's doing it, and when you don't have to go do all that because somebody's just, you know, they're bringing a boat to the shore and they've already got slaves on there.
Yeah.
Then it's just like, oh, well, that's easy. I don't know where they came from. I don't have a conscience about that. Maybe they were already slaves. Maybe they did something wrong, which actually, so this kind of leads me into, this book that I was reading. I think it's called King Leopold's Ghost.
And okay.
It's about the Belgians who, and I might be getting, hopefully I'm getting most of this right. They went to the Congo.
Okay.
And at first it was just exploratory because they weren't really sure what they were going to find there. And then they saw all the resources and they wanted to start taking them. And then, you know, they saw that there were slaves there. And you hear this argument a lot, right? You hear, especially when, you know, you have a group of black people saying we need reparations for all the slave owners. And they say every white person is a slave owner or was a slave owner, you know, something like that. And then the white person would say something like, yeah, well, you know, the black people were slaves too, or black people owned slaves too. And they'd start this whole rhetoric. And so what's interesting is yes, and in the Congo they did have slaves, but it wasn't as brutal of a system as we had in early America, because a lot of them were prisoners, which, you know, believe it or not, most people don't even know this. Slavery is actually still legal in the U.S. as long as you're a prisoner, as long as you've been convicted of a crime. Like, you can still, and that's what this whole privatized prison thing is doing. It's turning people into slaves and you know, having them manufacture cheap goods, cheap labor. It's, yeah. You know, a lot of roads were built. How are we going to build the roads? A lot of the roads were built by slave labor in prisons. And of course that creates a market for, well, let's create more crimes, arrest more people so we can keep the prisons full so we have more slaves. But in so there's that. In Congo, it wasn't so much like that. It was just kind of like, for the most part, it was punishment. They said there was some, like, you know, some people would be traded as dowry, which is like, I mean, we hear that story as kind of like, you know, marriages from like going all the way back to China. You'd see families who wanted to kind of make a contract together so they'd have arranged marriages, and that's almost, in a way, right. It's the same thing. You're selling your children as slaves to another family, or, but they're not being held captive, so it is different in a way.
Okay.
But so in Congo, like, that was what a lot of the slaves were, and not only that, there were actually ways to free yourself from being a slave versus, you know, in early America, I think, you could, if your owner decided to set you free, he could. But what was, you know, what were his requirements for that? That wasn't like,
right.
You might just be totally screwed and that's never going to happen. So it's interesting that the systems were like really completely different, but what happened was in Congo, they, you know, these Belgians came and they started seeing like, hey, well, that's a handy idea. We'll just force these people to work for us. And so they started saying, well, hey, we want our own slaves. And so they started taking them. And the rulers of Congo basically said, well, hey, they're willing to buy slaves from us. Why don't we start capturing more of these people and selling them? And so they created a market for that. And because the market was created, it was easy for somebody to say, okay, we're going to create more of the product. And like all of this, like it really all ties in together. And this is, you know, what we were talking about before, like, can you start a legitimate ethical business where you're making a lot of money but not stealing from people? And here is a perfect example of the opposite of that, which is just like you're stealing people and turning them into products and creating a completely unethical business model. But to the Belgians, like, you know, for them it was just like, well, these are some, you know, they're people, they look completely different from us, they don't speak the same language, we might as well treat them like animals. It's easy for us to do that because they can't, we can't understand their pain because they're not speaking our language, so it's easy for us to ignore it. We don't have to capture them, so it's easy for us to just, like, it's a fair trade, right? It's I gave him money and he gave me these slaves, it's a fair trade. It's easy for people to kind of set all these moral objections aside.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is everybody else is doing it, so it must be okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is like, this all goes back to groupthink. Like, it's like,
I think the only way we get out of that is just like really challenging our own paradigms and just saying like, okay, you believe this is true, but this is your paradigm says, so how do those mesh? Like, for example, me as a Christian, like I'll meet a whole bunch of Christians that aren't libertarians, and they always bring up Romans 13, which is the verse that talks about, you know, obey the governing authorities, right? And they always say, like, that means you have to follow the law, always. But if you present them with the scenario. Oh, okay, what happens if you're a member of the SS in Nazi Germany, and you work at Auschwitz, and you're supposed to be burning and murdering Jews? What then? It's illegal to not. So, what is the Bible say that you're supposed to do there? And they're just like, this isn't Nazi Germany. And he's right. Like, okay, but if something is intrinsic truth, there can't be exceptions. It's either true or it's not. It's either true all the time or it's not true all the time. So, you know, you got to be able, and it's only when you're able to, you allow yourself to be challenged in that way that you really grow and that you really break out of these mentalities that actually are evil and that cause you to do evil things to other people. I mean, we were talking about this too after the last show. I mean, I feel like I owe the libertarian movement a lot because it has challenged me to go through that over and over and over again to the point where, like, I apply what I say I believe to every single thing I do, and it just makes me a better person. And it enriches my own faith in the way I live my life, because I'm not just thinking, well, this is how I do things because I'm a Christian, but I'm saying, if I really believe that all people have these rights, if I really believe this, if I really believe this, does that actually mesh with what I'm doing right now? You know? And, you know, everybody has their own paradigm, how they view the world. But if you're not, but where these things are common is we all believe we have certain rights. We all believe everyone has the right to live. I mean, we hear it all the time. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, blah, 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 blah. But if you really believe that, then you shouldn't support the government stealing from you. If you really believe that, then why are we basically deporting people just because they happen to exist in the wrong boundary? Like, don't just think of that as, because people didn't consent to every law that exists. As soon as you start talking about immigration, people start going back to that. And it's like, that's not true. So you got to be able to back that up with some kind of ethical standard that holds up to every single situation. And if it doesn't, you got to ban that ethical standard because it sucks.
Right.
You know?
So here's what's interesting. I don't know too much about the Bible, so correct me if I'm like,
okay,
way out of line here. But so I went to go Google Romans 13 right now just to see what it says, and I was like, okay, and it does start out with, well, here, let me read what it starts out with. Wait, hold on a second. Did you say, yeah, no, you said 13.
Mm-hmm.
Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established.
Yes.
The authorities that exist have been established by God. This is not talking about government. Government was not established by God. So this is, I mean, if anything, this is talking about the church, right? Let everyone be subject to the authorities of the church? Is that?
I think he is actually making the point about human governing authorities like the Romans at that time.
Well, okay, and that's, well, so that's interesting because the, well, this would be before the European kings, I guess. But the European kings were, by virtue of the crown, some sort of divine, they had some divine right.
Right, that's how they legitimized their authority, was some kind of like divine right type of mentality.
Right. Okay.
When Paul is writing this, the situation is the Jews live under the Roman Empire, but they're allowed to have their own way of living. So there's a lot of different authorities at play here. There's the Jewish authority, there's the Roman authority that you're under. But what's also happening is Christians who, they didn't call themselves Christians, they called themselves followers of the way, but there were a lot of them that were violently rebelling against the authority. And Paul, his argument was, this isn't helping our cause. If our cause is to spread the gospel, it's not helping us by being viewed by the public as basically violent, you know, crazy people. And so what he's trying to say here is, okay, don't do that, but, you know, respect the authority here, but also this is the bigger authority. The God is higher than the governments. And so there is a hierarchy there where, you know, your duty is first to God and your fellow human and your brother, your family, whatever. And then, you know, just exist, survive under the government. So,
check us out. So this is, I guess, Romans 13, verse 8, or is 13 the verse? I don't know.
13 is the chapter.
13 is the chapter. Okay. Love fulfills the law. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. So in your example of like, okay, what if the Nazis, you know, said this is what you have to do?
Exactly.
If you love others, you have fulfilled the law, according to this sentence right here. So obeying those orders to kill somebody would be contradictory to that. So
exactly.
So you can object to that. So even then, now I'm just picking apart, like, okay, what is it really saying here? But then I went back to, so I was like, okay, well, what if this is out of context, right? Because they said, you know, okay, yeah, obey the authority. So I went back one chapter to Romans 12, and it's saying, give me a second here. What did I see here? Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good. His good, pleasing, and perfect will. And so that's basically saying, don't conform to what everybody else is doing. Use your fucking mind and think for yourself what is right and what is wrong.
Exactly. That's the thing, is like the majority of the Christian community in America today, they just copy what they're taught. They just copy and they think the same way. They don't do what the scripture is saying. They don't, what that means in like today's terms, that just means challenge yourself. Ask yourself if this is right, if this is actually real. You know, don't just believe something just because somebody has said it to you, or because it's always what you've believed traditionally. If you can't challenge, or if you're afraid to challenge yourself, like, you need to like check yourself, because why are you so afraid to change? You know, if it's wrong, you should be happy to change the way you're thinking about things. So.
Right. That's really interesting, man. Now you got me thinking, like, okay, we need to start like a libertarian church. that's totally really interesting. And it's like, because I've always had this position. I'm really more of an atheist, but to anybody who has, I'm not one of these atheists that goes around telling people, you know, your religion's fake. Like, if you benefit from, you know, from your beliefs, sure. I'm not going to hold that against you or try to convince you otherwise. But if you're going to be in these beliefs and you actually have in this system of your own beliefs, some teaching here that, let me finish the sentence. some teaching here that's actually like very pro-liberty, then, you know, I'll be happy to point that out. But so this is back in Romans 12, and you were talking about immigration earlier. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, which is, that's saying not an eye for an eye, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But then it says, it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In this doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. So, that's kind of a weird way to put it, but if your enemy are these illegal immigrants, then give them food and water, right? Let them come in and let them, you know, treat them well, and somehow that's going to punish them.
What it's saying is, like, it makes them look like the idiot, because imagine that scenario. I'm keep treating you horribly. I'm just an asshole to you, and all you do back to me is you just give me gifts.
I see.
You hug me, like, you give me money, and I just look like the fool. That's what the coal thing means. And so honestly is one of the more radical parts of the Bible that people really have a hard time with, because it's like, hold on, if you punch me in the face, I have the right to punch you back. You know?
And that's really, like, you know, that's how wars escalate. I mean, you know, if you think about it, it's like, oh yeah, they, you know, we were attacked at Pearl Harbor. Let's go nuke them. That's how things escalate. And instead, what you can say is like, no, let's just be better prepared and have a better defense. So if they came to strike us again, and if we were prepared and we protected ourselves and defended ourselves, then they'd quit attacking. They'd say, hey, we're losing this. That doesn't mean to go and, you know, just completely annihilate them, because now you're escalating things. Now you're, you know, and maybe that's a bad example, because in that particular fight, it worked out for America, mm-hmm. because they were just so devastated they couldn't fight back. But I mean, if you look at like any little fight, you know, everybody wants, it always starts like that, right? Like somebody's looking at you funny. So you want to look at them funny back.
Anything, right?
Yeah. And then you keep just like staring at each other funny until somebody says something, and then you say something back, and then somebody gets offended, so you say something offensive back, and the next thing you know, like, they're punching each other, they're choking each other out, and they're trying to kill each other. That is escalation. And you know, and then you go back and look at it in the very first, you know, oh yeah, this was just eye for an eye, and everybody had the right to you know, fight back with whatever they did. But come to find out, the very first person who was looking at the other person funny wasn't even looking at that person. They were looking at something behind them. Yeah,
right. Misunderstanding.
It's really
hard to, like, apply that and speculate about military engagements in history and really say objectively what would have happened if we did it differently.
Right.
Like, maybe it could have caused peace, or maybe they would have just kept trouncing on people. But one interesting example to look at is, this is kind of a common theme in Chinese history, is a lot of times when these, like, outside barbarian nations came to attack the Chinese dynasties and they weren't military fit enough to handle it, they just buy them off, or they'd intermarry with these people that are attacking them. And that was, like, just a common policy for them for a long time. I don't know that's a true example, because they're really just kind of subsiding, but.
Yeah. And there's I was watching this, is this show on Netflix with, I think it's Morgan Freeman narrating.
Okay.
And it's like, so they went and they started interviewing some of these tribes out in the middle of Africa that were, like, still very, like, primitive. And they would have, you know, they had, like, some sort of agriculture. And there would be, like, two tribes, and, like, every couple months they'd fight each other. And then every couple years they'd make a peace treaty, and they have these really weird rituals. Like, they'd cut the cow's stomach open and rub, like, half digested grass on each other. And it's like, and this would like seal the deal. It was like a really nasty handshake. But yeah, it's like, it's really interesting to see like all these different ways that people kind of make peace. And like, really, what is it, like, what's the point of all that? That's not really necessary. It's just like some weird ritual that you're doing.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's just communication. It's just like, we want something that can be, that we can hold as certain, like, I mean it when I'm doing this, you know? And these days it'd just be a contract. I mean it because I signed my name at the bottom of this piece of paper.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's, when you think about it, it's like,
that's just as mundane as rubbing a bunch of inside organs all over your hands and shaking hands with somebody.
Yeah, you know? It is. Although, you know what's interesting? Okay, so, and maybe, so I'm trying to figure out, like, why do we even have this in the first place, right? There's this thing that they say, like, if you're going on a trip, right, you don't want to be, like, on vacation and be like, oh, shit, did I lock the front door? What was that movie? Where I think it was, like, the, what was it? It was, like, this movie where they had, like Schwarzenegger and Stallone and like all of those guys, and one of them was no, it wasn't that one. I don't know, this guy, he's like he's like, man, he's like
heroes.
Yeah, it was something like, it was one of the, it was some weird movie like that, and I think it was like Vin Rames or something. He's like guys, I haven't been home in 9 months and I can't remember if I locked my front door.
Oh, it screwed me up too.
Yeah. So it might have been like Mission Impossible. I don't know. There's this trick that they say where when you go on vacation, do something like really crazy or stupid when you close your door, right? Like close it, lock it, unlock it, open it again, close it again, and lock it. And then when you're on your vacation, when you have to ask yourself, did I lock the door? You'll say, oh, yeah, because I did, like, all that crazy shit where I locked it and unlocked it again. And so...
But what if you do that when you unlock it as well?
And you forget, I know I unlocked it, but I did it. Well, I think, like, the whole thing as ceremonial, I mean, because I have done that. Like, I've done the little thing, and then I've left, and then, oh, shit, I left my passport inside. So then I go unlock it, and I get my passport, and then on the way out, I just, like, lock it and go. And then I'm like, oh, shit, did I do it the second time? But I think that's, like, that's really interesting. It's like you're – because that's how our memories work, right? If you have, like, some significant event associated with something, then you remember whether or not something happened. And so if you shake on a deal – because, you know, people are always like, come on, man, we had a deal. We shook on it. Like, it versus, like, if you say, well, I don't know, I don't remember we agreed on it. I remember, like, we were talking about it and we had some different ideas, but I don't remember if we actually agreed on it or not.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the difference. But as soon as you do the handshake or start throwing cow intestines all over yourself.
Right. It's interesting what they say about, like, speeches and stuff is – like, you always remember, like, 10 or 20% of what you hear, but you'll remember 40% of what you see. And then you'll remember even more of what you both hear and see.
Right. And if you write it down, you increase that. And if you participate in it, you increase that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, like, it's amazing how much your brain works. And that was actually I was watching this. I'm still a seminar junkie, I guess. I was watching this this course on using your memory, and how to basically create patterns in your brain that help you remember, you know, really, really complicated things. And so when I was thinking about this, I was like, you know, it's like things are all related and connected, right? Like, there's, like, we all know about, like, mnemonic systems of, you know, you remember, like, a word and then each letter stands for something, like, all kinds of different things. Or a sentence, like, for the planets, my, I don't even remember what it is, my very educated mother served us 9 pizzas or something like that. Like I can still remember that, and I haven't said that sentence in like 100 years.
Right.
I just gave away how old I am. So, but what's interesting is like a system like that is good, but when you're talking about like when you go to school and you have all of your different subjects are like very isolated, so like you'll go and you'll study just geography for like right. an hour, and then the next day an hour, and it's like just that, and it's not really connected to anything else. So at the same time, you'll go to another class and you'll learn English, you'll go to another class, you'll learn science,
right?
But you're not putting them all together. And what's interesting is like, you know, the when you're in science class, they'll tell you, you know, I don't know, Pythagoras, math class, I guess, would teach you about Pythagoras. And they'll give you the little short history about where he's from and what year he was born and this other stuff. But that's completely separate from your history class, so you're not going to remember any of that. That's right. completely separate from your geography class, so you're not going to remember where it was. But if the classes were like organized in a way where all of the information was kind of together where it was supposed to be,
yeah,
like it would probably actually make it easier for people to remember.
And you'd think that people would know that, and that more of our classes would be, or more of our education would be oriented that way. Which that just opens the door to talk about government intrusion on how we
right.
design our school systems. But I don't know if we want to go on that tangent.
Yeah. We always talk about how wonderful those schools are. Yeah, it's really fascinating. My eye's itching. I'm getting all teary thinking about how wonderful my school experience is.
Like, example is, you know, I always try to pack my subjects together for my semesters at college. So, like, if I got to take some history classes, I'll take a bunch of history classes, like, if it fits with my requirements. So, like, right this semester, I'm taking East Asian history, but then I also took American history at the same time. So, I'm, like, learning as we're going through time, what's happening in two regions of the world. And it just enriches the learning curve.
Interesting.
Both of that. So.
Interesting. All right. Well, man, we've been talking.
Yeah, for you're a long right about time.
That. We've been talking so much, I haven't even finished my first beer yet.
Uh-oh.
And I had two on my table for just in case. So, this has been pretty awesome, but let's not put everybody to sleep. And as fascinating as some of this stuff is, but this has been awesome, and we'll definitely talk more about this sometime. I guess before we go, I'll give you the opportunity to plug any websites you want, but are there any cool books on any of these subjects that you think anybody who's stuck with us so far would be interested in reading?
There's a guy that put a book together that's basically a whole comprehensive package of like entire world history, and does a really good job of fitting everything together, and also does a really good job of letting you know when we're like basically guessing and this is just what's most likely or what he thinks, and separating that from this definitely happened. Like right. anything before like 1492, like it's basically just guesswork because we don't have a lot of documented stuff. It's called like the web of history or something like that. Let me just make sure.
I'm Googling this too. History of the web. I don't want to start clicking these links. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole right now.
The human web.
I'm doing it.
I'll post in the video a link to Amazon. But yeah, that's what it's called, the human web. It's really good.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awesome. Yeah, and I mean, like, I've never been a huge history fan. I like totally sucked at it in school.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably like the only cool thing I liked about history was like looking at like pictures of like old weapons and stuff in museums, and right. That was about it. But yeah, then like, and I think this had to do with, you know, that connection, right? Cause like what's, I think like a big part of that connection is, how is it even relevant to us? And, you know, I hear about history, even American history, and I was like, so what? I'm going to go home and I'm going to play my Nintendo. Who cares?
Right.
But then, like, once you get out in the real world and you're like, shit, this cop just gave me a ticket. What a dick. He wants me to give him money. The hell's this all about? Then it's like, oh, shit, I better go read up on the Constitution. Can he really do this?
Right.
And then, and then it's like, and then you start like getting into like who wrote the Constitution and where did they come from, and like, and then it's like, oh, this shit was actually kind of important and interesting.
Yeah, and then you look at, you know, all the reasonings for when they were debating about the Constitution. Like, for example, the Federalist, which is basically the argumentation for the Constitution, were basically like, we need the Constitution because it's the only way to protect us from the problem of factions, which is just the idea that people don't agree. And when they don't agree, they get really hostile with each other. And like, the Constitution is going to solve that. And it's like, what do we have still to this day? Factions. We're still at each other's throats.
Right.
Didn't really solve anything. So.
Yeah. It's, yeah, they fucked up on that Ninth Amendment though, man. That should have been the first one. Man,
I think when you just start challenging yourself what you think about the Constitution and not just basically worshiping it as if it's like another Bible, then you start to realize how unworthy it is of just idolizing. It's just like, it kind of sucks, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been the best thing the world had ever seen at the time. I don't even know if that's a fair statement, but, you know.
Maybe.
That was, I mean, they were okay with slavery. Times have changed and we have become more civilized. So should we totally scrap it or should we replace it with something? That's an interesting idea. But we should at least be having that. We should at least be not offended to have that conversation and not say, ooh, he's a fascist. He wants to throw away the Constitution and probably put a dictatorship there instead.
Yeah, seriously.
We should be able to have – that's really one thing that pisses me off about people. You know what really grinds my gears? Is, you know, everybody's so afraid of having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, you really got to – it sucks, but like, there was a guy who, you know, I basically posted taxation as theft somewhere, and some guy, you know, he started fighting me, and I started typing something back, and I was like really angry, like, yeah, well, fuck you, you're an idiot. And then I was like, wait a minute, and then I just deleted it, and I was like, okay, let me try to not reason with him, because he's already in a position of being unreasonable, but let me see if I can say something to him that's going to provoke him to think instead of provoking him to get angry. And so that's what I did. And by like four comments later, he was saying, well, yeah, you're right about that, which is like progress, but I totally took it. It's that thing about escalation, which, and you know, I'm not saying like it's not easy to avoid escalation. Like, I was just about to do it myself. And if I hadn't stopped to proofread my message, I might've done it.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, we have to, even when we're angry, be like, okay, wait a minute. Is this really worth something worth fighting over? Or should we actually try to turn this into, like, an interesting conversation? And should we hear each other out? Which, you know, and, like, I know, like, we disagree with everybody. Sometimes we just don't have time for it. But we really should make time and let our own thoughts be challenged, because otherwise we are being dictators. If I already know that what I know is right and anyone else who disagrees with me is wrong, then I'm a dictator.
Right.
Like that's what it is. And like all these people that we're seeing come out of the woodwork, whether they're Trump supporters or Bernie supporters or AOC and all this other stuff, you know, when they say like, you're going to do this, that's dictator. That's, yes. You know, that's dangerous because they're not even questioning if they're right or wrong. They're just like, I think this is right, and I'm going to fight anybody who gets in my way.
Yep.
That's dangerous.
And that's the mentality that people bring into them when they take office, and it's just even worse because now you're not just inserting your own pride onto other people, but you have violence backing it.
Right.
You know? So.
What a world we live in, man. All right. Well, all right, let's wrap the show up. And just so we know, what is taxation?
Extortion, theft, horrible, evil, take your pick.
All right. Good enough for you. I'll catch you guys next time.
All right.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.
You boys like Mexico!